We're about to have a conversation with Kwame Mason, who is director of this new film called Soul on Ice, Past, Present, and Future. And it is a film about African descended people playing the game of ice hockey. Mm. Yes, ice hockey.
That's it.
Kwame, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate this.
So it's such a fascinating piece that you got together with. So you're from Canada originally?
Yes, born in Toronto.
Toronto, right?
Yes.
So you, as a kid, you played hockey?
Yeah, that's one of the things. So, you know, if you were born in Canada or you come to Canada, they're going to put a hockey stick in your hand, some way, shape, or form. You're going to walk outside and someone's going to say, "Do you have a hockey stick?" And you're going to say, "No." And they're going to say, "Here's one for you." So, you know, as I remember myself, I remember having a hockey stick in my hand and, you know, being outside to play to friends. Because, you know, I'm a first-generation West Indian. So, you know, you got to think of the, you know, especially when a lot of West Indians came to Canada in the 1960s and you're there and you're trying to assimilate with your neighborhood. And if you're a parent, you have your children, you're going to put your children out with the other local kids to go and, you know, play hide and go seek or play, you know, baseball or whatever. And, you know, one of the things that the white kids were always doing was playing hockey. So you didn't want to be the only one not playing, right? So you figured out, you know, you had to pick up this stick and go and play. And it was, you know, it was always a great bonding experience.
So growing up in Toronto, it's just curious for our listeners here, and for me too. So in places like Toronto,
yes,
Montreal, Quebec, are there black neighborhoods or people live together in more interracial areas?
It's more, you know, Canada is very multicultural and integrated like that, you know. I've never lived in a predominantly just black neighborhood. There are, you know, in Toronto you have the West End, you might see a lot more blacks in certain areas, but for the most part, your community is very, it's not segregated like that. It hasn't really been like that for decades, you know? So I think it's great, you know, especially if you're new to the country, because you get that idea of being amongst everyone and you don't feel segregated. Now, you will have little areas like, you know, there's Little Italy, there's Little Greece and all
right,
these
right,
areas.
Right.
You know, and so, there, you know, in the West End of Toronto, there are these little pockets where it's predominantly like blacks, you know, West Indians, but nothing in the sense where you're actually put in a like an, almost like an island away.
Right. You know? There's not the same kind of legal ghettoization, legal segregation that took place in the United States. It's a very different set of things. Then. So, but you did in face that. You loved hockey. You played it.
I did love it.
But you also, I remember reading some interviews with you where you talked about that you did face some things when people said, why don't you want to play basketball, or your ankles are too small, or whatever.
Well, basically, it was like, you know, when you go out and you play ball hockey, say street hockey with your friends, one of the things you always do is you, when you got your teams together, you kind of pick your favorite player. Someone would say, "I'm Wayne Gretzky or Steve Shutt or someone." So my favorite player growing up was a guy by the name of Guy Lafleur, who played for the Montreal Canadiens. Blonde hair. This guy used to smoke cigarettes on the bench, goal scorer. He was just the flower. He was great. So, you know.
I see why you liked him.
Yeah, right. He was the dude. So, you know, I remember this one particular day, you know, everybody's picking it. And I said, "I'm Guy Lafleur." And this kid said to me, "You can't be Guy Lafleur because Guy Lafleur is white." And that's kind of like the first time. And I was about 6 years old at that time.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the first time I kind of was like, I wasn't upset. I was like, okay, well, you know, in my head, I'm like, well, who can I be then? And I couldn't figure it out. You know, I didn't know that there was a guy by the name of Willie O'Ree. I didn't know that there was a guy by the name of Tony McKegney and Mike Marzen that were, you know, playing in the NHL that I could have said that I was like. And, you know, it was one of the things that always stuck with me. And it was not until I started, you know, working on the film that memory really came back to me and made me say, oh, yeah, this is why I'm doing this, because the kids nowadays don't have to go through that problem. There's not a kid could go out there now and say, "I'm Sidney Crosby." And even if a kid says, "Well, you can't be Sidney Crosby, he's white," well, he could say, "Well, I'll be Joel Ward then." or I'll be P.K. Subban, or I'll be Wayne Simmons, or Trevor Daley, or Devontae Smith-Pelly. The list goes on and on, whereas when I grew up, I didn't have that. So it's great to see that a lot more black athletes have picked up the game and stuck with it and pursued their goal, because there's a lot who just couldn't handle it and just said, I'm not playing it. And I think hockey lost a generation of young black athletes that could have been very well in the that could have done really well in the game.
So interesting. When we get into the heart of the film here and what you discovered in this, but you chose the name Soul on Ice.
Yeah.
Eldridge Cleaver's book, Soul on Ice, right?
Of course.
So play on words in a sense, but it's also coming at a time when Stanley Nelson's film The Black Panthers is out and the Black Panthers are now back in the news. So Soul on Ice is probably almost a prescient move on your part to say this is the name, right?
You know, the original name of the film was supposed to be Young, Black, and in the NHL, but we thought that was
boring.
Yeah. You know, it just didn't have that funk to it.
Right.
And then a friend of mine named Mark Stoddard, he is a graphic artist and does a lot of great black history work. He said, you know, Soul on Ice. It's a play on words. It has the reference of ice. Blacks usually, you know, back in the days, we always used to say we got soul, you know, and that was a great way that we could combine the two. And then I added past, present, and future, because that's what I wanted to encompass in this film. I wanted to talk about the past. I wanted to talk about the present. I wanted to talk about where we're going. So Soul on Ice, past, present, future just got this funky ring to it right now. So, and it looks good on a t-shirt.
Yeah, it does. You got t-shirts?
No. I do actually have t-shirts, you know.
That sounds, I like that. I want to get one of those t-shirts.
All right.
So going back to the history. So what? So when you decided to do this, this is, how much did you already know?
I did a fair bit of research years prior. So, for example, when I was living in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
On the west part.
On the west coast of Canada. I was a radio announcer there. And in Edmonton, Edmonton's a very huge hockey populated. It's just all about hockey. So I was going to a lot of games. A lot of the Edmonton Oilers became friends of mine. And they would come on my radio show. And while I was there, that's when I kind of was like, man, these guys are so humble. They're unlike, they don't have that same type of attitude as basketball players and football players do. You know, they're very humble guys where, like in Toronto, you know, we had the Raptors, and this is around when Vince Carter was playing. I was around the city. These guys would be, if you go to a club, they're behind the VIP and you can't even talk to them. Whereas hockey players will sit and have a beer with you. It's just like it's nothing. And so I always liked that about them. And plus, they're the toughest athletes out there, you know. And so I started to do some research around 2005 because I was seeing a couple more guys, P.K. Subban, Wayne Simmons, these guys starting to come into the league.
Who were black hockey players.
Black hockey players who were coming into the league. And they weren't just fighters. They were mainstays. So I was like, oh, something's happening here. And when I was doing the research, I came across a story about the Colored Hockey League of Nova Scotia, which was around 1895 to 1930. This is an all-black league that played in Canada.
Well, not all-black team, all-black league.
All-black league of, I think it was about, like, there was at least eight different teams.
Really?
Oh, yeah. So when I found that out, I had that exact same reaction. And I was saying to myself, wait a second. I grew up in this country. Why do I not know this information?
Right.
And it made me say, if I don't know this, then how many other people don't know this? So I started gathering information. And anytime I'd read something, I would just put it aside. So that was around 2005, 2006. And then 2012 is when I started my work and my full-on research and just going full forward on putting the project together.
I want to come back to the original black hockey players in Canada.
Yeah.
But you focus, from what I've seen, you focus on certain people and certain things.
Mm-hmm.
One is this a man now who's older, obviously, Willie O'Ree.
Yes, right? The very first black athlete.
The Jackie Robinson of ice hockey, they call him.
That's what they call him. I mean,
but there's some other issues with that, I know. Right?
Yeah, I think label-wise, it's, you know, he is the Jackie Robinson in the sense that he's the first black athlete to play in the NHL. But I don't think he had the impact that Jackie Robinson had in baseball to open up the floodgates, because it was 14 years after that before the second black player played in the NHL.
Because there wasn't, well, you described this, you used to talk about this black hockey league that existed in Nova Scotia and Eastern Canada in the 1890s and early 1900s, but there wasn't a equivalent black hockey scene going on when he came in the 50s, right?
No, he's done by then. You know, and that's the thing. That's the thing with, the NHL had formed while the Colored Hockey League was around, but they never picked from that group of guys to, you know, bring them on like Major League Baseball did, because Major League Baseball went to the Negro Baseball League and, you know, found Jack and found everybody else there and brought them
all in.
That
didn't exist.
So they didn't do that with hockey, you know what I mean, which is a sad, because there were so many great players, you know. And, you know, the great thing about the Colored Hockey League that was, you know, during that time is, A, in North America, that's Canada and, you know, obviously I'm talking Canada and the United States. This was the first organized sports league for blacks. Not the Negro Baseball League, not the Harlem Globetrotters, not any of that. This is where blacks first came together and said, we're going to create this league of these athletes, and we're going to charge admission to the games, and we're going to put on little exhibitions, and we're going to have some fun, and we're going to play this game called hockey. So that's one thing I thought was great about the history of the Colored Hockey League, as well as, if you're a fan of hockey, you're very familiar with the slap shot. If you're a fan of hockey, you're very familiar with the butterfly style of goaltending. In the Colored Hockey League, or actually in the white leagues in those times in the 1800s, the goalies weren't allowed to go down on the ice to sprawl for the puck. The Colored Hockey League, these goalies did that. And this is a practice that you see today. During that time, the newspapers, when they would describe the plays or describe the guys that were playing in the Colored Hockey League, they would describe this thing that they did, and they would call it the baseball shot. Now, they would call it the baseball shot because most of these players played baseball in the summer and the spring, and in the winter played hockey. Now, if you think of what a baseball shot might have looked like, you have to think of how does a baseball player's movement flow? It's a swing, a hard swing.
Right, right.
Now, if you equate that to a hockey puck, that's a downward swing, which is called now the slap shot.
Well, wait a minute. Let me back up a second. So,
I'm blowing his mind right now.
I think everybody listening right now is having their minds blown because we don't know this stuff.
Yeah.
So you're saying that some of the major moves and styles of playing ice hockey in Canada, seen as this white boys game from Canada and the northern parts of the United States, actually came out of the black players in those leagues in the 1890s, the early 1900s.
Oh, yeah. Butterfly style goaltending as well as the slap shot. And, you know, even what they would do during these games, like during their half times, they would have shows. They'd have entertainment. They would have guys doing like skating tricks. And, you know, you see that to this day where you have all-star games and you see the halftime shows. These are all things that the Colored Hockey League were doing back in the 1800s.
But never recognized as coming out of the black world.
Never.
So what else is new in life, right?
Exactly. But it's okay, because the beauty about history, I mean, one thing people always would say is, like, when the detractors of the game of hockey, it's saying that it's a lily white sport.
They
always say that, as big as he is, racist and this and that, they don't talk about it. I'm like, well, it's not their responsibility. Like, what are we doing as black people? What are we doing? How have we contributed to the lack of black athletes playing the game? One thing I always tell people is black people put ourselves in boxes. And I am guilty of that. When I was in public school, the majority of my friends were white, and I did what they did. I BMX biked. I listened to heavy metal and rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
I played hockey. When I got to junior high school, all my friends, my circle of friends were all now black. And around that time, this new music started
hip-hop.
Coming along, and it was called hip-hop.
Right.
So to hell with rock and roll, to hell with heavy metal, I'm listening to this rap music because it spoke to me.
Right, right.
It was the music of my generation. So I was all about that 24/7. And then the group of my friends, when I was like, "Hey, let's go out and play hockey." Said, "Hockey? That's a white boy sport. We don't play hockey. You ever see any black person play hockey? No. All right then, let's go play basketball." So I put myself in that box. I said to myself, "Well, I don't listen to heavy metal no more. I don't listen to rock and roll no more. I don't go BMX biking no more. I don't play hockey no more. This is what I do." And that's sad because we should not box ourselves. If you talk to a lot of the parents and you ask them, you know, "How can you never put your kid in?" "Oh, well, there's no black kids playing. Oh, it's because it's too racist. Oh, because of this, because of that." Well, you know what? We have played. We always have played. And we will continue to play. And I think the generation now is starting to take themselves out of that box and just wants to play. There's so much opportunity in the game of hockey that blacks just don't know about. And once they see it, there's going to be more opportunity. And I was even having this discussion saying, forget about the sport itself. Think of it as a job. It's an industry. Basketball, baseball, football, hockey, they're all industries. They're all businesses. There's jobs there. If you go to the head offices of major baseball league teams, there are marketing, promotion, down to front desk, all the different opportunities.
Right, right, right.
The same goes for hockey. And if we just kind of opened our minds to the game of hockey, you might find something else out there. So, for example, as well, if you were a young black hockey player, you never had the skill really to play in the NHL to really take it that far, how about getting your license as a referee? Hockey's been around for a number of years.
It's an old game.
Okay? All right, we're coming about 100 years. There's only been two referees that were black. Two.
So you see, we're at the tip of the iceberg here.
We are tipping the iceberg. It's exciting time right now.
So if you look at people like you talked about, I want to get into some of this history so people get understand it. If you talk about some of the players that Willie O'Ree,
Herb Carnegie. Herb Carnegie was considered one of the best players to play in, say, like the 40s, but never had the chance to play in the NHL. Tony McKegney, he played in the 70s and 80s, considered the first black superstar, the first player of color to score 30 goals in the season, and all-star player. Mike Marzen, the second black player to play in the NHL, he played for the Washington Capitals. So, yeah, there's a great history there, man.
So when you look at the players who are playing the game, and some of them are still like, it's the guy now who's hot is Kyle Okposo.
Kyle Okposo. Yes, Okposo. Yeah, he plays for the Islanders of New York, and you got PK Subban who plays for the Montreal Canadiens.
So it's still far and few between.
Yeah,
right. But one of the things I read about Willie O'Ree, and I think it was in your film that the pieces I saw, was that he had to put up with a lot. N-word being thrown at him, especially when he played in the United States.
Oh, yeah.
And he put up with a lot of kind of racist behavior from fans.
Batteries being thrown at him. Chicken bones being thrown at him, you know, you name it. He got it. He couldn't, you know, saying he can't stay at certain hotels when he played in the United States, you know. So when you think of this generation, if somebody uses the N-word against them from the audience or maybe trash talks them on the ice, they almost have to laugh at that. Because all they'd have to do is look at that opposing player that said that word to them or that member and say, "Hey, listen, if Willie O'Ree can go through it, then I can go through it."
So I'm curious. All right, so you were in radio for a long time.
Yes.
And so you knew a lot about hockey. You played the game. You knew hockey players.
Yeah.
You covered it, interviewed them all.
Mm-hmm.
But when you made this film, because you decided you had to do this, so
yeah.
I'm curious what you learned.
Oh, okay.
You've already taught us things in this conversation none of us ever heard of. Most of us have never heard of before.
Right, right, right.
About the role of black hockey players before they were even in the leagues.
Yes.
Which is just amazing to me.
Uh-huh.
I mean, never heard of that before.
Yeah.
Not surprised, but so what did you learn that you didn't expect?
The one thing that I learned that I did not expect was how much the human spirit can take and what they will go through just to complete something or to do something that they love, the perseverance through adversity. So, for example, I was sitting and I was doing an interview with Mike Marzin.
Who is?
The second black player to play in the NHL. He played for the Washington Capitals. He was 18 years old, kid from Toronto, comes out to Washington, girlfriend is white. Yeah. You know, right there tells you it all. And this is in the early 70s. He told me a story about death threats that he would get. Death threats. Like newspaper letters being cut out in words. So-and-so, and you're playing the white man's game and all this.
Right, right.
And that.
Well, I've seen that clip in your film. Yeah. Right. That was about him.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
him going to a game and having somebody tell him that, you know, the FBI is here because somebody in the crowd might be trying to pop one off on you. you know,
wow.
Any athlete will tell you there is a form of preparation that they must have before every game. And it's not anything new. This has been going on since the dawn of organized sports league. They've got to be, they're serious men. They prepare themselves. So imagine preparing for a game, and now you also have to prepare yourself for the fact that, oh, God, who's going to throw something at me from the crowd? Oh, God, the FBI is here because somebody might want to shoot me. How about, you know, hearing that the other team is picking straws to see who's going to come and fight you that game. And you have to also get yourself focused to play. So the thing that I learned was how racism and bigotry can be distractions to your overall goal. There are so many young, there's a generation of black players, and I get emails from guys that said, man, I used to play and I was pretty good, but I just couldn't handle these guys. Every tournament I'm getting at, somebody's calling me this, and guys are trying to spear me, guys are trying to take my head off. I just said, forget.
So other players too have their own racists who are attacking black players.
Yeah,
on
man, like right, it, right, you right. know, and it took, and a lot of those guys just couldn't handle it to the point that they quit. But there was a lot of there's a small batch of guys that did not quit, and those guys inspired a generation to continue to play. And those are the guys you see nowadays were inspired by those guys who took on the abuse. And the sad part, again, in what I learned was there was a lot of people that quit, that if they only had that support and that confidence and that will to just brush it off and carry on, man, this game would be a whole lot different.
So part of your film focuses on, if I have this right, and is focused on a young man and his father?
Yeah,
right?
Yes. We have a section where, because we're talking about family, and there's
a kid
by the name of Nathaniel Adams and his father, Kerry Adams, and I wanted to show...
And where they live?
They live in Toronto as well.
That's what I thought, right, Toronto, yeah.
I wanted to show how much the influence of a family, or how much impact you need. You need that family. And I wanted to show black families, because I don't think it's portrayed as well as it can be in North America.
Canada as well as U.S., huh?
Yeah.
Right.
So, for example, my main, the main storyline is a young man by the name of Jaden Lindo.
Right, that's what I was going to ask you. Right.
So my main story is him from his draft year. So we see him at the beginning of his OHL, is the Ontario Hockey League. It's basically that one step before you get drafted to the NHL.
Like the minors.
Yeah, it's like your minors. Yeah. So I was showing that year and to see if he gets drafted or not. And I also focus on his parents. I felt that I need to show a dark-skinned family, mother, father, son, sister, a family that is putting their kid in this game that's predominantly not for our community. And I wanted to show that they're just like anybody else and show them in a positive light, because I felt that was very important.
And part of it is also talking to the older players.
Yes.
Willie O'Rabe has a huge piece in this movie.
Yeah.
Talking to him about his life and his playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, he, like, the two older statesmen that I focused on were Herb Carnegie and Willie O'Ree, only because I felt those two were the most important and the ones that would be highlighted the most as far as the guys who played in the past. Herb Carnegie, only because, again, here's a little another piece of information for you. You've said you've seen a couple of hockey
games. I've seen hockey games. Yeah.
So you know, coaches behind the bench, they'd have this board.
Yeah.
And it's like a little mini hockey rink, and that's where they would chew their plays. Herb Carnegie, black man of Jamaican descent, was the first person to create that. He made it into a game called Pass and Shoot. So basically, it was a board game that was put out back in the, I think it was the, I want to say the 50s, and it was just to teach, like, so you're at home with your family? Okay, well, hey, this is where a defenseman goes. This is where the offenses go. And then teams start to take that idea, and you see it as common as any, you'll go to any rink, you'll see that. And I bet you not many people ask, well, who is the first person to create that?
So it's not, this. I can't, I'm really glad you brought this.
Can I give you one more about Herb Carnegie?
Go ahead, yeah.
You know that there's hockey schools. The first hockey school in North America was created by Herb Carnegie, a black man from Toronto.
See, I'm so glad that you came to Baltimore.
Okay.
And made this film Solo Nice, Past, Present, okay. and Future. I mean, because I think it's eye-opening for all of us to kind of understand this and what you the things you teach us in this film. Mm-hmm. People can see the film. It's today at Morgan State University's Student Center Theater. Mm-hmm. And Kwame Mason will be there to answer questions. 11 a.m. So scoot over there and check that out.
And I have T-shirts for sale because I'm still a starving artist. I'm selling some Soul on Ice T-shirts for $20 for anybody who wants to support the cause. You know,
got you. So, Kwame Mason,
yes, sir.
Incredible documentary film, Soul on Ice, Past, Present, Future, bringing it here to Morgan State University. I thank my friend Milton Kent of the School of Global Journalism for turning us on to this. Kwame, good to meet you, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, and I really appreciate this, and good job over here.
Thank you, bro.
All right.
We have to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll hear an interview with Baltimore native Philip Mayer about his novel American Rust, a story set in a small former steel town in western Pennsylvania that explores how people's lives change when stable middle-class jobs disappear from the place they call home. On the way to break, I want to remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From school funding to testing, you can learn more about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's MarylandEducators.org. Or at SteinerShow.org is the Maryland State Education Association's banner.